What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
We've had quite an afternoon here at the Grove, and we're not done yet. Two more hours. Lane Kiffin started it all off for us. And Tim Tebow, Wright Thompson. Second half begins with Jordan Rogers. We just had Roman Harper on. And Jordan, we asked Kiffin what he remembered from last Saturday night, and I don't think there's anybody better to ask than you, since you were broadcasting the game that we are still talking about. Kind of take us through the events that led to one of the biggest controversies ever.
It was wild. It really was. Obviously, it was the 4th and 24, and it ended up being the right spot. I mean, the ball was short, but obviously Tennessee fans and the review process were irate, and then you saw, like, a few water bottles go down. And it's like, okay, it's not the first time I've seen like one or two things get thrown. And then you just see like a sea of them coming down. And you're just like, whoa, okay, what's going on? And then you see the Ole Miss bench kind of like start to walk towards the field a little bit as kind of play stops. And then the golf ball, I mean, like it got completely out of hand. It was most nuts though, I think, to watch the home cheerleaders, the home dance team, the band filed out of the stands and walked down the huddle or down the tunnel and left. So it was a crazy scene. We weren't sure. Obviously, we didn't brush up on those rules. We weren't sure, can they stop the game? Can they not? So we're trying to play catch up in the booth, trying to figure out what they can actually do. Obviously, they did the right thing, let it calm down. And, I mean, Tennessee fans, still had three timeouts. I mean, it was still a ball game. So right. It was just wild, the whole context of it. And then at the end to see Kiffin throw his, you know, more stuff come down. He throws his visor up. There's nobody in this sport, I think, that could have handled that situation better and with the levity, I think, that Kiffin did. I thought it was fun. It made my job fun because, you know, of course, as soon as I saw that he grabbed that golf ball, put it in his pocket, I said, guarantee we're going to see that. And when Cole interviews him at the end, and we did. So it was wild.
So
Kiffin's a lot of
fun.
Let
me start with the call, because Tennessee fans are still calling and talking about that, and I know that got lost in the shuffle, but that's where it really began. It was the right call.
From my vantage point, yes. Okay. And again, it was 4th and 24. I mean, they'd imagine it was like a 4th and 2, like something you'd expect to pick up. You don't expect to pick up a 4th and 24.
Right.
Now, we didn't have the ideal camera look. The ideal camera look would have been from across the booth, from where we were, the other side of the field, because then we could have seen the ball. But putting the views together, you could tell where the ball was in his body, right? It wasn't up high. It was down low. You could tell where his right arm was. So you could piece the looks together, and there wasn't a world where you could say, man, that should be maybe a first down, or even, yes, that should be a first down. That's about a yard short, maybe a half yard at best short. So I thought the call was right. But, yeah, tough because we didn't maybe have the best camera angle for it.
So while this is going on, people think this is easy to do, but there's not a playbook. You're on live television, and the audience, I'm sure, is just growing exponentially as you're talking. What was the traffic like? What I mean by that, what are you hearing from the directors? Because nobody really knew what to do.
No, and we got the head of officials on the phone. Our truck did, to try to figure out what are they actually doing, right? Okay. So the game day or the game management team is obviously talking to the referees about how to control the environment. We obviously, like I said, didn't know, is this a scenario where it can be called or not, right? Is that on the table?
Yeah, obviously, Kiffin said that he probably would have been more than happy to say
it's
over.
And that's what it looked like. And so me watching, I'm like, it kind of looks like Kiffin is not – he's not cool with this situation. Obviously, as the coach in a situation where you're winning right there, obviously you're like, hey, maybe we should shut
over.
It down. Yeah.
Good game.
Tom is texting Steve Shaw to try to figure out how to explain what is going on, what the rules are, to try to figure that out. So that's all going on in our ears as we're also trying to paint the picture and explain what's happening. And as we're also trying to figure out, was it the right call? Was it not? We're looking at replays. So.
And you also, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, Sunday morning to give an opinion about what had transpired, but you also don't want to incite the audience any more than they already are, depending on which side of the ball they're on.
Totally. And that's the tough part. I think in those moments, there is no playbook for that. There's no playbook for that scenario being on live TV for 15, 20 minutes, not really knowing what's going on. I remember when we saw the golf ball bouncer hit KFA or whatever happened, I was like, man, that guy got any eligibility left? You know what I mean? And looking back, I'm like, well, did I make a little too much light of the situation? But it's like, it was unprecedented. We didn't know what was going on, you know? So a crazy environment. But yes, I do believe that the call was right. And the game ended the way it should. And Tennessee had an opportunity at the end.
And for all the outrage, and I'll admit, I was part of the outrage the next day, but I had 12 hours to think about it or 8 hours. It would have been different if you noticed somebody had been hit.
Totally.
Yeah.
We didn't have it. We didn't have a clear shot. We didn't. For all we saw, a bunch of water bottles were going onto the field, and then game management kind of took over. And one of the craziest scenes, actually, was game management moved all the student section up to almost like the second deck of that first bowl. And then once gameplay started and Tennessee got the ball back, all the students rushed back down to field level. And it was a very weird thing to see because we weren't sure, wait, are things getting thrown again? Are they just coming down to get their seats back? And so, you're seeing the momentum of Tennessee driving again, and then these students come rushing down to the front of the field. So, wild game, wild scene all around. Ole Miss ran 100-and-something plays. I mean, it was just
Jordan,
one of those
it's
games.
It's a speculative question, talking to Jordan Rogers. If somehow Tennessee had pulled the game out, what kind of scene do you think we would have seen then?
Mayhem. Absolute mayhem. I mean, they probably would have rushed the field.
Yeah.
I mean, after that scenario, I'm not like, how could you not?
They would have gotten a double fine.
And I will say, actually, just to preface this as well, that was the best scene I've ever seen in college football, honestly. For all the stadiums I've been at, the pregame, the light show, the checkering kneeling, the energy, the atmosphere was unparalleled. So that makes me think as well, if it would have gone Tennessee's way, it'd have been crazy at the end. And it almost did, right? The ball just off of Cedric Tillman's hands. It looked like he could hardly jump anymore. I mean, they ran so many plays. Everybody on the field was gassed. So really fun one.
So we had Kiffin on here 2 hours ago, and I mean, the indications are pretty strong that Matt Corral is going to be in the starting lineup. But what type of physical shape do you think he's in?
Well, I was joking with Tim earlier. I was, Tim, you won't know what this feels like because when you ran the football, you were 250 pounds. I was right around Matt's size, about 200 pounds. So, and I did run the ball a lot my junior year. I remember waking up on Sundays and Mondays. I couldn't lift my arms. Couldn't practice on Mondays. Couldn't walk through on Sundays. Like, it's just
– You had a great offensive line, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, my situation is a little different, you know. but I just – so I can imagine that was what it was like. I mean, I had Mondays where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to play. So I imagine that's how Corral felt. I imagine that's what Lane saw. And as the week goes on, you start to loosen up. You start to feel better. Now, I will say, that should affect the game plan. I don't expect we see Matt Corral run the football 30 times. I do expect if he does run, he has – had it pounded into his head that he needs to get down and protect himself because he's a competitor. He'll put his shoulder down and he'll run somebody over if he needs to, but that doesn't need to be them, right? For me, I wasn't as good of a passer as Corral, so we needed my legs for our offense to get going. He can play from the pocket as good as anybody. I think he's the best player in the country. So this game plan will adapt with a healthy-ish Matt Corral. I think less running the football, more ball control to mimic that run game, and I think they'll be just as effective.
Let me ask you about another quarterback who's critical to his team's success tomorrow, and that's Hendon Hooker. As Alabama, probably licking their chops after they saw the punishment he took last week. I know everybody is somewhat low-key about his condition, but you saw it.
It didn't look good. And I've kind of heard that he's trending in the right direction, and obviously whatever that final decision is, or even more importantly, how long he can play in that game if it was kind of a close call, there's nobody more important to Tennessee. Nobody more important to that offense, but nobody more important to that football team than Hendon Hooker right now. I mean, as soon as he was injected in the starting lineup, the efficiency, the accuracy at that position allowed the run game to flourish, right? It just complemented it so well. And if you think that with a healthy or healthy enough Hendon Hooker team that Tennessee can't put up points against Alabama, you are wrong. They can and will score points. If Texas A&M can put up 41 on Alabama, Tennessee can score some points now.
Right.
Now, to what extent Hendon Hooker's healthy will be a big one, but I tell you what, I walked away from that Tennessee game not just impressed with the offense. I know they didn't have their best day, but that defense is so improved, and it's unbelievable. They lost everybody to the transfer portal. They're middle of the road statistically in the SEC, But they're a stingy defense. They play tough. They rally to the football. There's not really much star power, but they're a team that's going to make it difficult on Bryce Young. It's not going to be a day where he can walk in there and just throw it all over the place or run the football. Brian Robinson's not going to run all over them. They might get theirs eventually, but they're going to make it tough on them. So Hendon Hooker and his health could make it interesting.
You've talked to Josh Heupel quite a bit this year. I'm curious for those who are saying, well, okay, well, Hendon Hooker is so good. Why did it take so long? What is the explanation?
I'll say it like this then, because Joe Milton's more talented than Hendon Hooker. But Hendon Hooker, and in talking to Heupel, he's like, there's a few things we didn't know in practice. You don't know how tough a kid is.
Right.
Hendon Hooker's extremely tough. And you really don't know how he handles true pressure. And can he stay accurate under pressure? Milton couldn't. Hendon Hooker absolutely can. He's been accurate under pressure. Two things you can't really simulate the way you want to in practice. So that staff didn't know what they had. Now, look, is he the perfect fit for this Josh Heupel offense? Probably not, because you would like to be able to stretch the field more vertically. You saw Drew Locke do it at Missouri. This offense thrives having a big arm quarterback that can push it downfield, but also can be accurate enough to complement the run. He's just so efficient right now that that's the best thing going. So it took so long because Hendon Hooker is not like a crazy, unbelievably talented superstar. He's just a good football player, and he's good in this system. I think Heupel has done a good job of managing what he does well and not asking him to do things like push the ball downfield, things that he's maybe not as good at.
Everything you've talked about so far is on the field. The intangible a lot of people are asking back to Oxford as we close down is, you know, how does LSU prepare? How are they prepared for this game, and what do we expect from them? Because they have been a team that has been very uneven, and I don't know. So I'm asking somebody who may have an insight.
I tell you what, I think the biggest thing that has been missing from, let's say, the 2019 team, everybody likes to compare it to that, so let's just compare it to that, the leadership on the field, right? The leadership that can take ownership of the team, the culture, and move – not move on without a head coach is not what I mean, but move, not need the head coach to drive everything, right? They weren't quite there. What I saw last week was a team that their physicality, their intensity, their focus was completely ramped up. So I think this, maybe in a way, this scenario is forcing the leadership to emerge quicker than maybe it would have from Max Johnson, from some of the other young players on that team. That's what needs to happen. Now, Coach O in this situation is weird because I think a coach that has nothing to lose is pretty dangerous. A staff that has nothing to lose is pretty dangerous. I can either be really good or really bad.
What do they care?
You remember Coach Caldwell from Vandy?
Sure.
Took over from Bobby Johnson. So he was my coach 2010. Right before we played Wake Forest last game of the year, he walked into the meeting about 12 o'clock. We had a night game. And he goes, well, they fired me. Go see your coaches. We're all like, what? Wait, so you're still coaching? So, like, you're going to coach today? We started our fifth-year quarterback who had never started a game. He set the record for most passes attempted in a game. We went for it on every fourth down. We blitzed almost every play on defense. We got run out of our own building by Wake Forest that day. You know, that's what I'm saying. It can either be really good or really bad. It could be really good for this team, right? It could be a, hey, we got nothing to lose. Let's lean into this. Let's be aggressive. And maybe that's the mentality this team needed. It didn't work for us because we didn't have the dudes. LSU's got some dudes. So it's an interesting situation, I think, in a weird way. It's going to help them play a little bit better, a little bit more focused, a little bit more angry, a little bit more intense, and that's a dangerous thing.
Does that last as long as things are going well?
Yes. That's a great point, because then once it's not, where's the leadership, right?
What time do we get out of here?
Once it goes bad, your Coach O gets up there, and he's kind of talking through things, and if you're a player, you're sitting there going, does it matter?
Yeah.
I love you, Coach, but you're not going to be here, right? So that is, yes, that is a great question. So when and if they go through adversity against Ole Miss and it starts to go the wrong direction, it may be tough to turn that back around.
Great stuff, always. Jordan Rogers, thanks so much.
Yeah.
What a pleasure. We are back. Much more to come right here in Oxford, Mississippi.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We're back. We're live at the Grove and a busy afternoon. Lane Kiffin dropping by, Tebow, so many others. It has been a great day. We have a lot more guests to come, including the athletic director here at Ole Miss. Randall is up next. Hey, Randall, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, it's Randall the Scandal down here in Birmingham.
Well, great to see you. Thank you.
Yeah, man, trying to help UAB get a little fired up for their homecoming. They've had some good stuff go on. They've upgraded their conference affiliation.
How about that?
A good coach and all that, and there's a good vibe here in Birmingham. You know, Alabama's a football state, but UAB just be another addition, in my opinion.
No, I thought that was a really good move. I've been through there quite a bit this fall and have seen the stadium, and getting into the American is a good move for UAB. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, I'm an Alabama grad, but I try to pull for whoever I can. And so I want to adopt UAB as one of my other teams. Hope to see a game sometime before the season plays out. But the stadium's cool and all that. That's actual reason why I called you. I was going to ask, the polls are getting to be more and more serious with each week. And as it stands right now, are there any one-loss teams that you can see that might leapfrog into the finals?
Well, Randall, I think let me try to explain the scenarios, and there are a couple of them. Yeah, you know, Alabama obviously is in the best position. If it wins out and beats Georgia, they're going to go to the playoff, and so will Georgia. There are a couple of tiebreaker scenarios that, you know, if A&M wins out, if Ole Miss wins out, and then Alabama loses again to Auburn, for the sake of argument, then there are quite a bit of there's, I mean, Ole Miss is still theoretically alive. I know some people here think Ole Miss would have a shot even at 11-1. I think it depends on circumstances. It just seems to me that they would be in a similar situation that Texas A&M was in last year. Hey, thank you for the call. Bob is up next. Hey, Bob, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Bob, we're doing great. Thank you for calling.
I'm down here in Natchitoches, Louisiana, where your friend Jimmy Himes grew up.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Coach O, Bobby Hebert, Joe Delaney, Charlie Toler played their football here in college.
I did not realize that.
Yes, sir. What I was calling about, it's kind of weird, but I would sure like to cook a meal for you using squirrel and rabbit and even raccoon and black-eyed peas and turnip greens and mustards and sweet potatoes and everything. And top it off with a dessert of hot apple pie and a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
What if I did this, Randall, and I really appreciate you making, Bob, if you making that offer. What if I just drop by for dessert? I really like the apple pie and vanilla ice cream.
That'd be wonderful, Paul.
Okay, yeah, we can give the raccoon stew to someone who is more deserving.
You probably got to run. Could I say one more thing?
Yes, please.
I've been in cardiac arrest 6 times in the last 2 years. Paul, there is life after death.
Bob, how that's extraordinary that you've pulled through that. How have you? Tell me about that.
Well, 3 times I was out of the hospital, 3 times I was in there. All I can tell you is all 6 times I knew I had died, Paul. And still thinking just like I was thinking before I died.
That, let me ask you a question, because I know this sounds strange, but I think we all are curious about what it's like. And, you know, I'm not speaking spiritually here. I'm just speaking in terms of how you were feeling physically. As you think you are going, I mean, what is going through your mind?
Well, Paul, it happened to me all six times in just part of a second, maybe 1/100th of a second. I was just gone. And when it happened, I was sort of talking to myself like we all talk to ourselves, and I said, you just died. I knew I died. It's just crazy, Paul. When I hear myself say this, I wonder, you know, if people think I'm crazy, but I'm not.
When you, let me ask you this, Bob. When you came back and you realized that you had not died, what was going through your mind other than the fact that you were alive?
Well, I was kind of out of it in a way, but it took me a little bit, 5 or 10 minutes, to kind of come fully back to where I was. But everything just came back, and I guess I was just stunned. But here I am, and I wake up every morning and thank God. I'm a devout Christian, Paul. And let me tell you how you're successful in this life. Either you earn a trip to heaven and eternal life, or if you're a failure, you go into the lake of fire.
Well, Bob, I am especially pleased to hear from you. That is really an inspirational story, both in terms of what you dealt with and your faith. You be well, and thank you so much for sharing that.
Could I get an address for you? I need to mail some very astonishing things to you.
Yeah, Bob, I will put you on hold, and the person will get you our studio address, and I look forward to hearing from you. You be well, my friend. Always good to hear from you. We are going to head for the break. We've had Lane Kiffin up here, Wright Thompson, Tim Tebow, Roman Harper, Jordan Rogers a few minutes ago. Laura Rutledge is next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. We are live in Oxford at the Grove. I think the last time Laura Rutledge and I were here, I ended up getting a flu shot.
I was just thinking about that the other day. You totally did. It happened like right in this general vicinity. And we were sitting there. I'm like, is Paul really going to do this? Because I don't know if that's really in line with things that you would normally do, but you got wild and crazy. You got that flu shot.
Yeah, I got the flu shot, and I think I almost died a couple of months later.
Yeah,
I don't know what I had.
He got like a little loopy, which is not unusual for you, but it was a little bit alarming. But anyway, it was great by the pharmacy.
Yeah, I've seen that picture before. I like my tongue sticking out. I was, and he's the local pharmacist here.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
No telling what kind of shots he'd bring us back tonight.
Let's not find out.
Wow, what a day it's been here. Yeah. We started with Lane Train. I know you've heard from him.
I saw that. You know, I was over there trying to get, once again, my daily crowd battle with you on Fridays, trying to get the crowd to come over with me, and no one would. I mean, it was once again, it was like, I have no friends. Everybody wants to go over to Paul. And I don't blame him. You are the face of college football. You're the face of the SEC. As much as, I don't know, maybe Lane Train thinks he's the face. But
I think he is.
Oh, you're so funny, Paul. When I heard you were saying that his visor looked like other coaches. It didn't look like him.
Yeah. I saw a picture of the two of us, and I said, yeah. Why is Dan Mullen in Oxford? I don't think he liked that, did he?
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Dan Mullen, where are we going next week for Nation?
That is a good question. So let me do this slowly.
Okay.
There are a lot of options.
Should I drum roll?
There are a lot of options next week.
Yep.
There's an Ole Miss Auburn game next week.
That's a great one.
A really good game.
Right.
If you're an Ole Miss and Auburn fan.
I think I already gave it away by my hint there, though, Paul.
Okay.
Whoops.
So I've already made reservations for Jacksonville. Should I keep them?
Yes. The SEC Nation is going to Jacksonville as we are wont to do. We have continued to go to Jacksonville every single year since the beginning of this show. It's one of our favorite shows of the entire year. We'll be at Lot P outside the stadium. So come check us out once again, as usual, 10 a.m. Eastern on SEC Network. And if you want to come out, you can be on TV, get to see all these guys here. I think Tim Tebow is going to be there, too.
Yeah,
and he lives there.
Don't tell anybody this, but Friday, an exclusive interview with Urban Meyer.
Oh, you just broke some news to me. I didn't know
that would
was
be
happening.
On Jacksonville local radio, but it won't
oh,
be
got
on
it.
Our show.
Okay, got it. Cool. All right, well, big teaser from Paul there. But, yeah, we'll see Jacksonville next week. We can't wait.
That will be fun. We try not to do this, but there's already some peeking ahead of that game.
It's hard not to. Well, here's the thing. Like, a lot of the SEC West, I think, is going to take a little bit of time to be decided. And obviously it depends on the games. But the SEC East can be decided next week. You need a couple things to happen.
Yeah,
but
a lot of people think it's already been decided.
Well, I agree. But you never know what kind of wrench people can throw into it. And so from that standpoint, I think that game has a lot of buzz around it, as usual. Either way, the cool thing is it always feels like that week there aren't other great games. So we end up being really focused on Florida-Georgia.
Yeah, that is one thing. First of all, this is a big bye week, and next week is it's a traditional LSU-Alabama bye week.
Yeah.
So I'm every time we're in Jacksonville, it doesn't really feel like anything else is going on.
Can I just tell you that I've talked to two different people, both women today, who said that they were going to be you for Halloween. What does that say?
I almost said something really funny, but it would also have led me to the unemployment line, so I'm not going to.
Well, everybody at home, just imagine what he might have been thinking.
Halloween is next week, next Sunday.
It is. So here.
Last year was on Saturday. We really missed that.
I know. So here's the big thing about it is we were talking through what the costumes could look like.
Okay.
And you know, obviously, you would need a bald cap, and then you would need to put some hair on the sides.
Or I could have some hair.
Yeah, well, right. But I'm saying, like, who wants to
be you? I mean, is it possible to add hair to your already?
That's true. Here's the thing. If I dress up as you for Halloween, I'm going to even make you look even better looking than you already do. What I was trying to explain to this person is that if she were to be you, she would have to have a certain size pants that would be too big on her, even though, you know. Wait, what? Who was that?
I don't know what that was.
Did you hear that?
I did hear that, yes.
Did anyone else at home hear that? Someone just yelled at me.
It's possible.
Anyway, all right. So, yeah, a couple people said they want to be you for Halloween, and they're both female.
So, not one of them was not your daughter, was it?
No, but I think I'll talk to Reese about
that.
You've
been sneaking that in as a, you know.
Well, you never know, Paul. We've had other kids dress up as you, so.
Yeah, we had a kid that followed us around for a long time.
The Feinbaum kid. I wonder where he's at. He's probably like 7 years old by now, or maybe a little older.
He may be in college for all
I know. He could be, right? Yeah. Anyway, next week's going to be great. This week, though, I think this game right here is fascinating for so many reasons, and a lot of them, you know, certainly center around the LSU side of things and Coach O. This LSU team has been through a lot already this season, and what you saw them do last week against Florida as much as you might have said, and we all picked Florida, you know, you might have said, hey, Florida looks like the better team. The game, you know, should be won by them. LSU's scary. They've got so much talent. I still think Ole Miss is in a really good position, though, to win this game and continue to have a spotlight. There's a path for them to the college football playoff. We're going to talk about that on SEC Nation tomorrow.
I also want to ask you about something you did earlier. This is a big weekend here for a lot of reasons, but yeah. They're honoring Eli Manning. You had a chance to visit with him.
Yeah, it was really neat. You could just see how much he cares about this place. And, oh, wow, cool. That's our SEC Nation set. Anyway, you can see how much Eli cares about this place and how important it is to him. And even just his face as he was talking about what it's going to be like to look up in the stadium and see his number 10 up next to his dad's. It's really special. Obviously, the end zone
with Manning. That's why
somebody gave
me the number 10 button a minute ago.
Oh, Paul, get with it. The fact that Paul sits here most of the time in a perpetual state of perplexion is amazing to me at how you get through things. I think you should put it on.
I was thinking of I was thinking of number two, Matt Corral.
Who gave him the number 10?
Did somebody give me this? Okay.
Oh, well, anyway. All right. So, yeah, put that in your pocket. That looks great. It's going to be really a special
ceremony.
I
don't want to ruin the shirt because I'm taking it back.
That's so cute. Now, well, can I borrow that for your Halloween costume? You know, the other thing that was really funny is, so Tim and I, Tebow, interviewed Eli earlier. And at one point, I'm blowing the interview. Like, you have to see it tomorrow. But at one point, Eli was like, or Tim said, hey, where should we go in Oxford? And Eli was like, oh, go to the library. And Tim thought he meant like a library with books. But right. Anybody here knows what the real library is around here. It was a really funny moment. You have to see it.
And the key to the library is you don't go early.
No, and you need a card, right?
Exactly.
I think you need a card to get in.
I've even been to the library here.
Paul, you have?
I have.
Well, how did it go?
It was cool.
It was cool.
I've been there. In fact, I don't remember, because Wright Thompson was here earlier, and I think
yeah.
We were there with John Grisham one night.
What a crew. John Grisham, Wright Thompson, and Paul Feinbaum.
Well, it sounds great, because John Grisham is a favorite son of Oxford, but yeah. I was here interviewing John Grisham, so it's not like I just ran into him.
Yeah, Paul, you really roll with a pretty
it
deep
was,
crew there.
I've had a lot of great Oxford memories, and I'm a literary geek, of course.
Of course. There's a lot of literary odes around here.
Hanging out with John Grisham all day at Square Books and then going to the library was...
It has a very...
Way up on my effete, literary, snobbish bucket list.
It has a very literary theme, that whole stretch that you did there. What are you going to do tonight?
I don't know. Is there anything to do in this town?
I think... Oh, somebody's asking me to prom. Oh, wait, I just talked to this guy. You know what? I think I got to ask my husband. Can my husband come with us?
Laura, can I educate Laura? When you're in Oxford, you don't ask your husband about things like this.
Oh.
You just go, right?
Oh, okay. All right. Then I'll go.
Are no rules in
he
Oxford.
Goes to, he goes to Oxford High School, right? The Chargers. Yes.
The Chargers?
They've got a big game tonight against Starkville. So
ooh.
We'll see who wins.
That sounds, he goes, is that like the Egg Bowl or something?
He said it's the Little Egg Bowl.
The Little Egg Bowl.
Isn't that great? I love that. Oh, wow, guys. You know what's a fun fact about me? I never actually got asked to prom really by anybody. So yeah. I only went to one prom, and it was with my brother's friend.
Laura, hold on.
Well, I don't know. Aren't you supposed to go to a couple proms?
As we used to say in there, first job, stop the presses.
Okay, but back in 1945, that's when you were at your first job, not when I was going to prom or not.
I want to know.
This is true, Paul.
You're Laura, your name was
McKeeman.
Laura Rutledge. Laura McKeeman.
I was Laura McKeeman, yeah.
You're Laura McKeeman, and where?
Well, we lived in Orlando. Now, I had spent some time doing ballet stuff in China,
Japan,
D.C.
Japan.
But anyway, I never had an offer, really, to go to prom.
You did not have a date to prom.
No, and so my brother's friend, a lovely young man, it was like, all right, well, he'll take you. So we went.
Can you think, imagine all those guys back in Orlando right now going,
oh, stop.
I could have taken Laura McKeeman. First of all, your name was all wrong.
Oh, stop. I know. What should it have been?
Right.
I don't know. Well, so the reality is, like, obviously my husband's amazing, but I totally, the name was a big plus. and getting married. I was like, I can't change this name fast enough. I love McKeeman, though.
It is
my heritage.
Name, but I think it's the main reason why you were never asked to prom.
Well, Paul, if you saw me at the time, you might feel different. I had cut my own bangs. I know you probably did that too, but I cut my own bangs. It didn't go very well. My mom was mortified. It was like, oh no, now we gotta, you know. So then I had to
famous,
get full.
Famous Toby Keith song from like 30 years ago. How do you like me now?
How do you like me? Yeah. Well, here's the reality. I will now experience my first prom as, you know, actually being asked here in Oxford, apparently. I don't know when prom is. When is it?
Prom is usually in the springtime, right?
I think he said it's in January. All right, okay. So I got to figure out how to get back here. That'll be fine.
Okay, we'll let you get prim and proper for prom. we are heading to a break here, but
you want to come with me too? You want a third wheeler?
I'm not even sure I went to my own prom, and I grew up just down the road.
Did roughly. You ask somebody?
I was so far gone. I wanted to get out of there.
Paul. I'm just imagining you going to prom.
I asked 14 women to my prom.
And they all said yes, and
they
brought them all.
No.
He ran out of corsages because he had so many prom dates.
We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
What a place to be in the Grove.
God, money.
Marty Smith joining us.
Look at you, man. They put your name in lights, bro.
Whoever thought?
I will be 100% honest with you, sir. Every single week, our great friend Steve Keller, who does our Steadicam, he sends me a photograph of when they put Marty and McGee in the Jumbotron every week. And I just will never get used to that. That's just crazy to me. It's
That'd
neat.
Be a nice little photo album.
I know you're used to it, but yeah, it's a great photo album.
I will say the first time I saw that, it was like, I'm not sure it's quite the same as having your name in Broadway lights. I would like to see that once, but.
I mean, there's 100,000 people in these football stadiums, so it's pretty big.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure are they up during the games?
I don't know. I do know that they ran the Jimbo Fisher, Marty and McGee commercial during a game
at
Kyle Field. Yeah.
Yeah, I spoke prematurely 2 weeks ago.
You tried to give us a whole ration of grief, and I understand why.
I just couldn't resist because, you know, Will Muschamp gone. Essentially, like, who's next?
None of us expected A&M to win that game.
You really? You guys blew it.
So we're really glad that they won it, though. So now there can't be we're not doing your commercials because of the curse.
That's funny. No, what was that like when you did that commercial?
Man, it was so fun. It was really fun. We spent 2 days, one in just outside of College Station where Jimbo's ranch is, and that ranch is unbelievable. 800-plus acres, I think, and he's so proud of it.
In other words, he's not leaving.
I mean, that's what we were saying. If you go to that ranch and you look off his back porch, there's an old – it was like an original farmhouse on this ranch years and years and years ago. And he refurbished it. They had it redone. It's stunning inside. And if you walk all the way through it into the back, there's this gorgeous deck porch that overlooks heaven.
Is that where he lives?
No, it's just where he gets away.
Okay.
And that's where guys that make nine a year get away.
Yeah, I wondered about that because I'm a single family dweller. I don't have anything else other than the one little hut we have.
He was so proud to show us. He put us in a gator, and he rode us all over the land and showed us it all. The river runs right through his property, and he showed us the best. I'm a hunter, like I love hunting and fishing, so he was showing us all the best spots where he has his food plots and his deer stands and. It was just awesome to witness. And so, yeah, I don't know why he would leave.
Yeah, I mean, people close to him just are absolute. Like, there's just no way. And I believe that.
What do you think is the impact for his longevity that he beat Alabama?
I'll go back to my McGee would understand this better because you're – broadcasting guy. I don't mean that the wrong way, but us newspaper guys always think about the obituary.
You know, I came up in newspapers too.
I apologize.
I think I've done a lot more newspaper writing than he has. In fact, I might.
You know what? The more I think about it, McGee is not really. He's a .com guy. Okay. Well, you understand this then. I'll just excise everything I just got through saying. You think about the obit, Jimbo Fisher. Not the obit, but maybe the obit to his career when he retires. It's Jimbo Fisher, who led Texas A&M to whatever and beat Nick Saban.
Beat Nick Saban.
First line.
First assistant to ever beat Nick Saban.
It's unequivocally.
I'm going to tell you something.
It's that important.
I think that loss for Nick Saban was the worst thing that could have happened for the rest of the conference. Because all those young men, he said it all season before they lost. All those young men, it's so difficult to impart upon them that you can lose when all they know is winning all the time. And maybe they were griping a little bit that all they did was play special teams, the younger players.
Right.
Maybe they were complaining, I'm not getting enough run on the offense or the defense. Well, then you give up a house call as a kickoff team, and Texas A&M returns a kickoff however many yards it was for a touchdown. All of a sudden you go, oh, okay, this can happen. And then they get beat. They get the butts beat. And now they know that can happen. So I think that's dangerous for everybody else in the conference because now coach has a body of work and context to say, look, y'all didn't show up to play and you got beat.
Okay, we're out of time. But next time I see you, I want to read those newspaper clips. I want to know.
You do not.
I know the young Marty Smith.
I'm going to light them all on fire. I don't need anybody reading my writing when I'm in 1998.
I want to read Marty Smith, the newspaper man.
It was unfortunate.
Thank you, Marty.
Appreciate you, brother.